Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news and specializing track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This week, we are brought to you by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. You can direct any other questions you might have on that to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
And I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast.
Hear, hear.
And tonight, we are not going to be covering MotoGP from this last weekend over in Japan. Although it was a great weekend, I will say, if you haven't watched it, you get an extra week before we light you up on the spoilers. But we're not going to cover that this week. We also won't be covering fantasy, so we will get back to that next week. There is not MotoGP next week, so perfect time to fill that in. But we've got a couple special guests I think we're going to bring on here in a minute. A couple of, can I say friends, Cole, or are these paddock enemies? Know.
Maybe we should ask them.
All right. Well, a couple of racers will be joining us from Utah SBA. We'll give try and get a good snapshot, get their backstory, a little snapshot of the season, and see the impact that USBA has had by the changes they have made, I think, and just racing stories in general. So,
right. Let's roll that intro.
Sounds good.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sixth.
We're back with some guests. So the guest right underneath me, we'll have you start first. You want to go ahead and introduce yourself? Let us know a little bit about your story, your riding.
Yeah, I'm Rick. I ride a BMW S1000RR. I raced the Novus class, then Sock 1000 Novus, and then the Desert Dash. And then I did a couple of the combined GTOs also.
Okay, awesome. So we got Rick on an S1000, another BMW fanboy. Cole, I really hope he didn't just bring only BMW riders.
Hey, man.
I guess we'll find out. Dan, you want to give us a quick little introduction?
Yeah, so this year I rode an R6. Last year I rode an R7. I raced the novice classes, so GTO, GTU Extended, Desert Dash Novice, and Moto 2.
Okay, awesome. Sounds like some...
Hold on, loaded question. You raced an R7 last year, but you didn't race it this year? How come?
I really tried. So we did some engine work over the winter, and we couldn't really get the bike running right at the beginning of the season. And then we just got it barely running in July. Yeah, I put it down really hard and didn't get back on it.
I'm sorry.
Cole, why'd you get to bring that up? That's a terrible way to start this. But hey, you were on the R6, had a great season after that, right? Everything's good. We're good to go.
Yeah. That was like right in the middle of the season. So like I had a really tough July. I had like three accidents in a row.
Wow.
One of which Cole is intimately familiar with. And I kind of spent the rest of the year dealing with my injuries.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll dig more into that in a little bit. Anyway, all right, I'm going to roll this week's weekly riding tip, and these riding tips are brought to us by Bittinger Motorsports, which is private coaching to build solid riders through vision-based training. So this week's tip is, you know, it's interesting. We got a couple racers this week, but I imagine you guys did some track days before you started racing, and I don't know if you guys have done track days on the East Coast. This is kind of towards something I haven't seen in Utah, but anyway, we'll explain it once we get there. But anyway, here we go. Are you looking for the bump? Getting bumped from one level to the next at a track day is a great feeling of accomplishment, but it's not all about speed. Making smart passing decisions, being smooth and predictable, being patient and respectful to other riders, Dan, are as important, if not more, than just exhibiting control of your motorcycle at higher speeds. This is a thinking man's game. Riding with a good head on your shoulders is a great way to earn that next bump. So if you don't know what the bump is that Josh is talking about there, Josh operates out of Texas down at MSRH, and over here on the East Coast, a lot of the track day orgs will require you to be evaluated by a coach or a control rider or something of the sort to get bumped up to the next class in the track day org. They also get really confused when you say A, B, and C group. I don't know why, but
Yeah, it's not really like that in Utah.
Yeah. So that being said, though, I guess it's kind of a good way to start, get your guys' backgrounds a little bit. You know, when do you have a lot of street background, or you know, how long you've been on the track? How long from doing track days to racing? Just kind of those general questions.
I started riding when I was 23, so much later start than a lot of other racers. Yeah, I started riding out in Boston, then I moved out to Utah and was doing canyons, and about a year or two after I moved here, I started doing track days. I did track days for, I don't know, 6 years before I started racing.
Okay. All right. So when you first did your first track day, you hop out there straight into expert group or A group? Okay. So we started down to C group, I assume.
Right.
So just to kind of keep in line with the tip, what was like the deciding factor for you, Dan, moving up? When you moved up to B group, you moved up to A group eventually. What things were you seeing, or how were you feeling out there that made you like, okay, yeah, hey, I'm ready for that next. I'm ready for my own bump, if you will.
Yeah, I just really wanted to feel comfortable myself. Like, I think you know when you're going fast and, you know, you can pass other people. And, you know, maybe I spent like a long time in each group, you know, before moving up. But, like, I wasn't going to do it unless I was confident. So.
Okay. So a little bit of kind of just self-confidence. Like, yeah, hey, I think I'm ready. Was it a big shock? Like, I know for me, the first time, I think from, like, first time I went to B group, it wasn't too bad. But I've been to some places where it's like, well, these guys are fast. Like, I'm comfortable out there, but these guys are fast. Did you have similar feelings to that, or?
No, I always thought that I'd be shocked. And, like, I'm still intimidated to, like, go to, you know, race or do a track day in California because I hear that, you know, everyone's so fast. But, yeah, no, I felt okay for the most part.
Okay. What about you, Rick? How long have we been riding?
Yeah, I was a late starter at riding also. And then I had ridden on the streets off and on here and there a couple different times with a couple different bikes, but then kind of got just where I was doing it a lot more. And then that's when the track days started coming. I've done those for a couple years. Okay. This is the first year racing, but yeah.
Okay.
Getting through the classes, it was kind of like Dan was saying, or just you kind of start off in the lower one and you kind of get comfortable. And then it just kind of seemed like here in Utah, at least, you just kind of knew, like, you were finding more traffic than anything else. And that's when you knew it was time to just step up to the next one. And then,
yeah,
definitely intimidating a little bit, not really going to the B, but when you go into the fast guy group, it is, but it's confident also knowing that you have other riders there that are in A and they just say, just be predictable. And then you learn, if I made a bad line, this is now my new line. And then they're going to come under and around you. And you just hold that spot and it feels perfectly fine.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I mean, I've heard very similar things. I think that's kind of what Josh was getting at with that tip is that predictability, right? More than anything is just, especially for a track day, you know, when you're racing, I think we talk about all the time, things kind of, you still care about other people's equipment. You know, you're still trying to keep everyone's trying to stay up at the end of the day, but a track day is much, much the opposite of that. There isn't a trophy on the line. There's no money on the line. So, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of the East Coast orgs out here have done this bump system where you have to get bumped up, which I think Cole and I have our own opinions on that system. If you've never messed with it, we won't dig into it. It's not the most fun to deal with, but such is life.
Well, we're supposed to get bumped up for racing, but I don't know how that works. Like, I don't know if I'm expecting an email, or if I got to email someone or what.
To head from novice up into expert?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you go to – you didn't go to the banquet last year?
Yeah, no, they scheduled it so late. And I already, you know, was planning on going down to Pahrumpa that weekend for their first track day. So, yeah, I didn't end up going.
So, I don't know – I'm in the same situation as you right now. All I know is Josh Fisher, damn it, is better be there because Josh Fisher has a long-standing tradition where he brings paper plates and he gives people their white plate.
Yeah, on a paper plate, right?
On a paper plate. I told him that's the only reason I was doing this is to get the paper plate from him, so we better be there.
There you go. There you go. Well, just to kind of close out that tip, I think what Josh says is rings pretty true. I don't know if you had any thoughts before I close it out. Cole, sorry, kind of skipped over you there.
No, I think that's good.
Yeah, just that you know, the predictability, like you mentioned, Rick, and then remembering you're not the only one out there, that'll get you a long ways. And Josh, we appreciate the tips. Thanks for bringing those in. If you're looking to ride with Josh, he rides down at MSRH. Check him out. We'll have a link down in the description. You can hit him up for any of your coaching and or riding needs. Now for the good stuff.
Now for the good stuff. This might be out of order, Easton, but before we get too far away from that last subject, mm-hmm. Dan, you mentioned you were doing track days for 6 years, you said, before you raced?
Roughly, yeah.
So I'm going to ask you the same question, Rick, but what was your bump? What made you go, okay, it's time to go racing after doing track days for that long?
You stole my thunder, Cole. I was going to ask that.
God, I don't really remember. You know, it's for me, it always just goes back to confidence. Like, I thought, you know, I could handle myself in traffic at some point and pass people cleanly for the most part. So I think I just took it one step at a time. You know, we did the I did actually two of the racer classes. The first time I didn't start racing after, and then the second time I was more serious and then did a full year.
Okay. And I mean, this goes for both of you. When you first did a track days, when you, like, your first track day ever, you sign up, was that, I'm going to go do track days and I'm going to race eventually? Or was it just, I'm going to go do track days?
For me, definitely not. I didn't even watch racing when I started going to the track.
Okay.
I think I was just at like a Suzuki dealership looking at the new bikes, and some racer came over and talked to me about going to the track. So I just went.
All right. All right. And Rick?
No, I didn't. I had had an accident on the street, because I was always scared about going to the track. Mm-hmm. And then it was just a normal, someone turns, makes a left-hand turn. It wasn't anything crazy, but it was a good enough accident. And I was like, well, screw it. That's the worst that can happen. So let me go get on the track and at least have fun. And I did, and it got to be fun, but there was no idea of like, well, I'm going to race. It was just, this would be something to do to be more responsible than going up and carving the mountains in the middle of nowhere, where if something did happen, I'm kind of just stuck laying somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. So sounds like pretty similar experiences to not just myself, but I think a lot of people out there. Is either an event happens or you realize that an event is imminent and you're like, all right, maybe it's time we try this out. That, or you get a buddy that's just like, hey, you have to do this. So yeah, I think, you know, Dan, you kind of already mentioned it, but Rick, when, you know, you said it, what, about 2 years, right?
I've done it for, I probably had like 3 years or so with just breaks in between where I do one or two track days here or there just to have fun.
Okay.
And then I was doing enough of them that last year I did all the track days. And I was like, well, I'm in a point where I can afford to try racing. So let me try and see if I'm at where I will be. So I did for Utah here a couple of the street GPs. So you kind of like a mock race type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not super serious. And I did those and it was fun and it wasn't like overly nervous or anything like that. So I'm like, let's try and see if I can make through a season and just see where I'm at and just see how it goes. And that's kind of how it went. It was more of just a availability of financially and just being ready finally after doing enough track days to feel I'd be confident enough to do it and not put me or anyone else at any kind of a over dangerous situation.
Okay. And not to jump to the end of the story, but you know, season's over. We're not too worried about results or anything like that, but are there any regrets in either of those decisions? I know, Dan, you've been going for 2 years. Rick, this is your first season. We got any regrets, any holdback? Like, hey, you know, I'm actually about to do my first season next year. Should I just quit now and move on with life?
No, I had a blast. It was really good. My biggest concern going into it was like, where am I going to be at? Am I going to even be around people to race? Mm-hmm. And you kind of find a spot. There's plenty of people out there. At least there was enough that kind of worked. And then as you get better over the season, everyone else, you kind of just kind of follow in a group. And that was my biggest thing. It was like, am I going to just be at the back and not have anyone to race? But there's always going to be someone. And it was a ton of fun and no regrets at all.
No regrets. All right. Well, that's good to hear. Dan, any regrets yet? You coming back next year?
Oh yeah, I'm coming back. You know, I'm excited to go race some experts, but you know, overall this year just went so much better than I could have ever expected. You know, like I said, I had a weird July and, you know, getting hurt, you know, I guess that's my regret is getting hurt, because the rest of the year I couldn't really push myself yeah, so, I mean, overall, it was good.
So, and you're, I mean, you're looking to put on some white numbers, which I know, Cole, you're waiting around for the same thing. Dan, I think, I don't know, but not quite there yet. Got another season before that. Sorry.
No, I'd like to.
Oh.
Or Rick, sorry.
Yeah, I think technically I'll get bumped just because of my placings in the Novice class, which is fine. I'm comfortable with that, and it'll be a good another learning. Like, I drop back, but I get to learn a lot more, which is fine.
Okay, so we're all moving up besides me. All of y'all are moving up to the white numbers next year. So you mentioned learning opportunity, Rick, which is great. I like that kind of outlook. But for all three of you, are there any, you know, any hold, any butterflies, any kind of nervous jitters? Just like back in the track day days, first time you move up to A group, maybe you're like, ooh, okay, these are the fast guys. Or first time you go down to Cali or whatever. We got any of those feelings moving into next year?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it'd probably be going to a new track day system, but since it's where we're at, I don't. I've seen the times. It's not like we don't know what the experts are doing. I know there's people I'm not going to touch, but there's also people I'll be around to race with. So I have no reservations about that. I think, like I said, it'll just be a good learning experience to kind of learn how, and maybe get towed up a little bit on times and lines, just to get to the speed that needs to be for the continued progression.
Okay. All right. Sweet. Good outlook. Dan, are you worried? You look worried down there.
No. Like I said before, like, I've been intimidated every step of the way, every step I've taken. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not going to do well. I'm going to do, you know, the wrong thing in, you know, whatever situation on the track. But every single time I've been like surprised that I can make it through it. And part of me is really excited to join the experts and be pushed a little harder.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of get that. It's a new battle, new group of people to overcome,
for sure.
I agree with both these guys, but I would also add, I mean, as was said earlier, it's probably, at least for me, there's less butterflies moving up to expert than there was putting a bike on the track the first time in C group, or, yeah, you know, for less sure. going to B group and less going to A group. I mean, we all know how to ride a bike at this point. We all know mm-hmm. how to get around the track at a respectable pace at this point. And like Rick said earlier, you stick on your line, trust the people around you to a point, and do your thing, and you should be okay.
Okay. Well, and to be fair, Cole, I know you at least were racing a little bit in the combined GTO. I don't know, Rick, if you did any of that, and Dan, both
of
you?
It was just the extended, and that was it for me. So it was okay. Still all the rest of us.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So because combined GTU.
Okay. Yeah. So a little experience there anyway, kind of with some white numbers filtered in here and there.
Theoretically, but
not a lot, right?
Not a lot of experts doing those classes. I did get to race Stefano Mesa, so the second round. So that was cool. Okay. I swear that's the only expert I saw in that class all year.
Not trying to offend here, but race Stefano Mesa, follow Stefano Mesa, watch him just leave.
Well, so I started on pole, and he had to start like dead last.
Okay.
So I was able to stay out front for about a lap and a third, lap and a half.
Till he caught up, and then.
Yeah, I have a video of it, and I keep on rewatching it. Like, I'm wondering like how much horsepower that bike has, because I'll be like full throttle and he's pulling away, and I just don't understand what's going on.
Oh man, that's good. You know, it's crazy when you find people like that out there, and you just.
I don't know if I've told you. I've brought it up on here before, but I was at Chuck Walla, and I got passed by this guy. Like, I was standing still, just silly. And I went back into the pits and I was yelling about it, not mad, but I was like, my gosh, this guy out here, he just passed me. And they were like, well, who is it? And I said, I don't know. He had a Joe Roberts replica helmet on. And they said, that's Joe Roberts, moron.
All right. Pretty good. Pretty good replica, you know.
Well, before we get off of that, since we're on this subject, mm-hmm. why don't we make a pack, guys? You want to really up the ante here?
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
Why don't we make a pact that next year we're all white numbers? We just skip that. You have a choice now. I don't know if you guys know this, but you have a choice. You can race one or the other. You can either race the combined, and you can be that one or two white numbers out there, or you can just go straight to the KOM.
I don't see the reason why you wouldn't just go to the KOM. You know, if I want the same experience as, you know, this last season, I would just stay in novice. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I'm not gonna win the KOM, but there's a lot for me to learn and see out there, and the experience is what it's gonna be good.
Okay. All right.
That's my intention.
Well, there you go. So if you're listening and you don't ride and you don't race with USBA yet, there's three more people racing KOM this next coming year. So keep that in mind. Definitely worth a watch.
Not too competitive, though. I'll just be in the back holding up some people. That's it.
Hey, you said it yourself. There's always someone there, right? There's always someone at your level. Always someone right above you, and there's always someone with you. Once you get past the guy with you, there's another person above. And that's how it goes. So,
You got to find your battle buddy.
There you go. So, let's see. Utah's got five rounds. I know a couple of those were cold. One of them had maybe some snow. Rick, at the beginning of this, you kind of mentioned, you know, you hit a spot where financially you could afford to race a season. So let's go for it. So from that kind of financial standpoint, when you're starting out at the beginning of the year and you say, okay, I'm going to race a season, you know, how much of a commitment is that? Did that take a lot of thought and effort and calculating beforehand? Or was it just like, no, I think I'm good? And what kind of hiccups did you have along the way, if any?
It was more of a, mine was more of a, I think I'm good. And then I'll just kind of judge how it is. I didn't know how much tires I would go through. I kind of set myself a limit of how much I would do. So that first round, it was cold. I was like, well, I have the tires I have. I brought an extra set of street tires. And then when we got the rain and stuff, I was like, I'm not buying a pair of rain slicks. So the best thing I can have is the street tires. And the worst thing is that. And that's kind of my median that I went with.
Okay. And
that pretty much stayed the same. And then, you know, having a budget of basically just tires, I didn't have an extra set of wheels. So it was, make your decision up and then see where you're at. And some of those first ones where we were kind of iffing out of the weather, iffing in on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us went to the line or to the grid with slicks on, like Dan once or twice. And then some of us just had to risk it with slicks. And I figured I'll go out and do the opening lap. And if it's dry enough, I'm good. I'll stay out. If not, I'll just come in. And I kind of just played it by, if I don't feel safe, I'll just come in because there's nothing to gain. But if I had the right gamble, then good. Maybe I can get somewhere.
There you go. Okay.
That was a crazy race. I remember. We're going to the, you know, the grid, and you're looking around, and a third of the pack is on race slicks, half are on, you know, rain tires, and then another third are on DOTs.
Yeah, man, that's wild. So both of you guys were on slicks. I think all three of you on slicks.
I was on slicks. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what, I'm not sure what you were on.
I was on, if we're talking about the same race, I was on slicks, but I was lucky because I have my bike for the vintage class. And so I put reins on one and slicks on the other, and then I got to make the decision last second. I just would have took the other bike.
Yeah, that does make it a little easier. You get the backup rain bike, just looking for the rain flags. I mean, you know, halfway through the season, though, you know, Dan, you kind of mentioned you had some injuries come up, but we're fighting. You know, you're halfway through fighting to get a place in the championship or get enough points or get a good enough lap time to make it up into expert next year to get the white numbers or whatever your kind of goal was. As you come through those or come to those hiccups, you know, how do you handle those? And how important was it to you individually to make sure you were at that next round?
I think it really helped that I had a good start to the season. And, you know, when I had all those accidents, I just kind of dealt with it the best I could. It was really difficult getting through the end of the year. And I don't think I would have gotten as well in the championships if I didn't play so well at the beginning. So I was kind of like leaning on that toward the end, especially in round five, you know, just in constant pain out on the track and just knowing that, like, I don't have to win every race anymore.
Yeah. Okay. So the, the points acquired and the work done at the beginning of the season helped when that hiccup came up, essentially?
Right. Yeah, kind of made up for it.
Okay. Rick, I didn't get your story of the season, but was there anything major that stood out to you as like, whoa, shit, here we are?
No, there's nothing major. It was just more of a learning from the beginning to the end, being towards the back and then kind of coming up and seeing what those guys up front were doing a little bit closer and closer. And then just learning the entire way of things to do and what I should have done different and stuff. But it was just pretty much a learn from the beginning. I had an incident on the first race of the first round with someone else and they went down. I was okay. So that kind of startled me at the beginning and just kind of brought me back into the real world of like, it's a race and it's fun, but like stay more to the reserve for the first half of the season. And then I start to feel a little bit more confident and on what I could do or what I should do for certain things.
Okay. All right. Tracking with that. Cole, any major hiccups, any emotional buy-in?
So how long did the season feel to you guys? Was it
extremely long?
Extremely long?
Yeah.
It felt pretty long. It was good long, but it felt very long with the 2 days and back and forth and all that.
Because it's only 5 weekends, right? It's only 5 weekends. It felt super long to me. Good long, like you said. I mean, I wouldn't want it any shorter. But how much did you guys do like in between Utah rounds? Did you find any other tracks or?
No, just tried to work out and. There's always bike work to do, but I didn't really travel
because
I didn't ride anywhere else. I pretty much did fitness for me, and then just the riding was just done on the track days before, and then the race week, and that's it.
Okay.
Because you talk, Dan, about injuries, and I feel you to a certain extent. I came into the season off of shoulder surgery that still not back yet. Right, it bothered me all year. But, running around with Mr. Anthony all the time, I'm at all kinds of tracks, but I broke a few ribs up in Washington, and then thank God I didn't have to get on the bike the next weekend like he had to, but we had a weekend coming up, and that just never went away, but that stuff starts to build up on you. I mean, we went and raced Colorado. We went and raced, a lot of places in between the rounds, and so it felt – I was interested to get you guys' perspective because it felt super long to me, but I don't know if I can blame that on the 5 races or the 5 that were done in between at other places.
Well, you spend all the time in between rounds just, thinking and worrying about it, And, the day after racing was over was actually, like, super depressing, and all of a sudden the season felt kind of short.
Yeah. It's over.
Yeah, I'd say that. And then it was just more of like it would be nice to do some of the other tracks like you were doing and things. But at the same time, like you said, the risk goes up, like if you do have something, but I'm not doing any riding. So as much fitness as I can work on the bike, on a track is completely different. And then as good a shape as you're in, you're still going to not be in full shape if you're not riding like you guys were, you and Anthony.
Yeah. And Cole out here cheating. That's what's going on. Cheating by going other places. So, I mean, on that topic, though, over the winter, Utah's got a pretty long winter. Obviously, your season's already done or what? Finished in September, technically, and not coming back till May? Or is it?
Usually May.
May. So we got a good few months there. That should be 8 months. Or are we looking? I'm not trying to get any secrets. If your race plans over the winter are of your own, top secret, whatever it might be, just that's fine. But, as far as over the winter, building up for next season, what are your plans? Are they different from last season maybe? Are they different from the first season knowing what you know now?
Mine isn't. I have the same idea. Maybe try to do a little bit of stuff on the bike, but not much, just so I can get it to work a little bit more for me since it's pretty much stock. Maybe work a little bit of suspension springs or something, and that's about it. Otherwise the resources I have are for racing here. I'd like to go other places, but I can't afford to do as much traveling as I would like to do with it. So it's right. going to be Absolutely. Kind of a normal thing.
Okay. Dan, any big plans?
Mostly I'm just trying to get healthy again. I got to let my shoulder heal. So I'm not going to go riding like that last track day of the season. But I do have some plans with the bikes. So on the R7, we're going to do like a new shock and linkage. That should make a big difference on that bike because mm-hmm. right now I'm kind of scared to ride it. And then on the R6, I get to do new fairings and paint, which I'm excited about.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. New fairings, new paint, new look. We get new leathers with that or?
You Maybe. Need them. You need them.
I mean, and if I get new leathers, they're going to look the same.
All right. Fair enough. So Utah.
Rick says airbag. You run? Airbag.
Yeah.
You run an airbag?
No, it's another, $1,000? And then you got to refill it? Like,
oh, come on.
I got to pick and choose where I spend my money.
On your safety? Now I'm gonna ridicule you. I'm gonna tell
Cole,
you.
You got an airbag system in your suit, Cole?
Nope.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right, we'll put the airbag to rest. We're not gonna talk about that anymore.
I was wishing I had one after Washington. I rode all the way home 15 hours, almost crying every bump we went over. And I swore I was getting an airbag. I was researching them, and then I just didn't. And short memory, man. Short memory.
It is a lot of money. I do know. I think there's a company out here called Hazardous Racing. They make custom suits, and he was working hard on trying to make the refills extremely cheap. So the upfront cost is a decent amount, but the refills were cheap and easy and doable. You could take it on your own. I think you just take this CO2 bottle or whatever it might be and just reload it anyway. So there's options to look into, you know, for people listening that are like, whoa, didn't know it was $1,000. There are some other options out there, but okay. So
donuts.
So what? Sorry.
You heard me.
Okay.
I said one of them hemorrhoid donuts. You can put one of them in your suit.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're old or something and you feel like you need that in your life, you could do that.
Some days.
You just be young and rebound and not worry about it. But anyway, Utah, USBA, if you will, made a few big changes this year. One of those being two-day racing, and the other one being that we added some money into it. So it's not just come down, spend all your money, and leave with a sweet little cardboard thing that says, hey, you did a good job. There's actually some money on the line. So as far as your buy-in, your want to be there, you want to win, did the money affect that? Is the two-day racing, is that a good thing? Was it more commitment? How did that kind of change the season for you guys?
I made everything so much more intense. Okay. You know, going back to the track for 3 days in a row and, riding your ass off. And then all of a sudden there's money on the line. Like, it's not a lot, but it's enough to like breed competition. And yeah, it was something special.
Okay. So the money. Go ahead, Rick. You're good.
I was just going to say, the money wasn't that big of a motivator. It was just kind of a nice thing. And I think it was a nice gesture. And the podium thing was more of a gesture of a nice thing just to get us novices some recognition and just feel like we did something. And hey, we did good, or we felt like we did good for that weekend. The money overall wasn't much, but it's more of just the gesture of us getting it. That was really nice. I think those that are competitive were going to be competitive no matter what. Lights out.
Okay, that's fair. So is there, not to like, I don't need your personal financial story, but is there an amount that you would associate with like, all right, no, I'm super bought in now, or does it not really matter because we're just racers at heart?
Well, I mean, if you just look at how much a slick is, and we're going to use multiple slicks that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're winning the class, you're not covering your tires for the weekend. So that's why I'm saying is like, it's not really a big thing. It's a gesture, and it's really cool that we get it, and it's awesome for the novices to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, you can either afford to do that weekend or you can't, and that's just a nice gesture on top of it, because you're not going to be making money or paying for your whole weekend off of winning in the novice class.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah. You get a nice dinner on the way home or something like that, but
Yeah, it's definitely a nice gesture.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with Rick that, you know, you're not gonna pay for your program with that kind of money or anything. I think we all acknowledge that, but also to what Dan said, what'd you say, the intensity?
Yeah.
I think so Rick's right in saying that certain competitors are gonna compete at a certain level regardless, because that's just what they do, whether there's money or not. But at the end of the day, if it was $5 or $500, why not go get it, right? Like, it added another element. It added another element for sure.
I think the podium was a bigger motivator. You know, that was really cool.
Okay, so that's interesting. So being up on, like, doing a podium celebration is what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds a little silly, but because we're all grown men, and some of us are very grown men, you know, being over 40 like I am. But yeah, but it's just an appreciation. You see the experts get it, and they have a little three, and then, yeah, it's five of us. Maybe you're not even on the big steps, but it just makes you feel like you did good for that week, and instead of just you got a trophy or you got a little thing that says, look, I did something. It's just an extra bonus that makes you feel gooey inside, even though we're grown men. For having a weekend of spending a lot of money doing silly stuff.
No, I get it, Rick. You don't have to hide behind the grown men fact. I get it.
Justify it.
No, it makes sense, though. You know, that it's you take a trophy home, you know, bring it home to your wife, your kids, or whatever. Like, yeah, hey, look what I won. But you're racing with your buddies out there, the family, the paddock family. So for them to put you up on the podium and recognize, hey, you did it, you know, you're getting that recognition on both sides then. You know, it's one thing to bring it home, but it's one thing to also get it where you're working, if you will.
It did. And it also, just for me being new to it, I knew Dan. I've seen him there at the track days, but I didn't know him. Mm-hmm. And never met Cole. But you get to see those guys, and we kind of became more friendly, I think, and like a compadres that we're battling and having fun or just out there together. It brought us kind of a closer together, I think, in the novice class, because otherwise we wouldn't have even seen each other.
Yeah,
we would have had our helmets on. We would have been out there, and then that's it. You don't see them this way. We had someone to talk to and go, "Oh, hey, I saw you last time, or you did this or that," or it kind of brought us all more together, which is a good thing for people that are having fun.
Help build the camaraderie there. So, you know, speaking of camaraderie, though, I mean, I'm gonna take a shot and say, I assume right now we're all good. We're all friends here in this element, but there is an element where you guys are all out on the same pavement, all shooting to get to the line first. So when you put that visor down, I want no hole here. I'm curious, because I'm on the outside, so I'm not worried about it. But when you guys put that visor down, even if you don't want to answer because you're uncomfortable, that's fine, that's whatever, but no hold back. What's going through your head when you're staring at whoever else might be out there? You know, what's going through your head out on the track, as opposed to, okay, now we're on the podium, cameras are out, we're all good and happy together. Visor down, the red mist is out. What's it like?
Oh, man.
There's not a red mist for me.
No red mist?
I definitely went through a few phases this year. And at the very beginning, like, I just wanted to be conservative. Like, I didn't know how well I was going to do on the R6. And, you know, for me, I felt like it was very fast bike. But then as I started getting better and, like, started winning races, like, I was desperate to keep winning. And there was a couple races where, you know, nearing the end of the race, I'm like, I'm either going to throw away this bike or I'm going to pass this person.
There you go. There you go. That's the right attitude.
But that kind of changed toward the second half of the year, where I was a little more conservative and, in passing.
Okay. And Rick, you mentioned no red mist?
No red mist. It was more of like, I knew I was there and either I had the speed or I didn't. And if I didn't, maybe I can try to stay close. It wasn't really a red mist. Like I said, I unfortunately had an incident the first race. So that kind of killed any idea of red mist right out of the gate. Because I'm like, okay, yeah, stuff gets real. People can crash. And obviously track days, you see it, but you don't know when it's right next to you or something. That changes. So it kind of went out the door, and it was more of just a competitive and, oh, I'm close to this guy. Can I stay? They're doing this one thing on this corner kind of bad. Can I catch up type of thing? Not really a red mist type of let's just go. We had my buddy that's not here, James, he had the resumes. He's pretty good at that. Just he was ready to go, and he sent it. And he did. He's great, and he's fast, but he has the more of a send it competitiveness. Where mm-hmm. I'm just trying to kind of work it and have fun while I'm learning and trying to be good.
Okay, all right. We got both sides then. Cole, I've heard some of what goes on in your helmet personally, but if you remember, enlighten us on a little bit of that.
So, I want to stop short of saying red mist.
All right.
But I mean, definitely competitive. I'm not competitive to the point where it's going to ruin my day all the time. Some days it did, but I'm going to swing this into a different question. I am the type of rider, believe it or not, I need a carrot. I like to chase somebody. There's no speed I can't go if I'm chasing somebody.
Do we need to get you just like a little fishing pole that hangs over and has got a little motorcycle, little toy motorcycle that dangles out in front?
Yeah, well, I say it all the time, but yeah, Rick mentioned age. I don't know if it's an age thing or what, but staying in the moment for a whole race, staying focused or trying to push, it gets harder and harder to like stay in that zone for that extended period of time. And if I don't have somebody around me, I'm looking at the cars on the freeway that are driving by. I'm like, oh, look, there's a semi. That's a Smith semi. Ah, it's probably a Kenworth. Yeah. And then I'm, whoa, you're in the middle of this, right? I need really somebody in front of me to keep me focused, keep me safe.
Once that person's in front of you, though, like, I mean, you didn't start from first every race this year, did you?
No.
So what are those thoughts? What are those feelings? We got to get it. I know there's words. I don't need the words per se, but what's going through your head? Why is it that the carrot in front of you gives you that edge? What is it that truly drives you in that moment?
It just gives you something to see. It gives you something to gauge off of. If the people behind you, you don't know how good or bad they're doing. Mm-hmm. You don't know what they're doing necessarily. So there's just nothing to gauge off of, nothing to push.
It gives you a reference point. You know, you can start to see where you are faster and how you can improve. And, you know, you're going into corners and, you know, you see that you're gaining a few bike lengths here and there, and you realize that you can do it and you can push harder.
Okay. All right. All right. I'll accept that. That makes sense.
But Easton keeps referring to, you mentioned earlier, Dan, not on this podcast, but you wanted me to share some videos.
Yeah.
I can't share any of my in-helmet videos because they're all quite explicit.
Well, yeah, they're bleep it out.
it would just be a solid, just a solid beat the whole time.
I yell at myself. I yell at the people around me. I yell at the track, the weather, the dirt.
You know, that'd be so funny. I want to hear it.
That's pretty good. I can say it's pretty good. You know what? I actually found out recently, I came and joined you guys for round four this year, which was a lot of fun. Definitely enjoyed that. I was racing the Street GP that I think Rick was talking about earlier a little bit. And I've had this issue where I'll come out of a day and people look at my eyes and they are bright red. And I start getting eye drops, water them up, and I'm good. And I thought it was just because Utah's dry. There's a couple vents in the helmet right up here that just direct that airflow directly into my eyes. But I realized something literally in that round, and that's that when I'm out there on the track, I don't blink the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm so focused on so many other things, I don't blink. So the big thing for me this year has just been kind of yelling at myself to blink. Like I'll be, as soon as I come out of a corner and I've got like a pause, a quick pause before I move my eyes to the next spot or whatever, I'll be like, freaking blink, dang it. Just blink. Get the blinking done now. So anyway, among other yelling at people, yelling at myself, like, you know, the classic, you break too early or maybe too late, and then you overshoot, and then you're way off, and you do the head shake so that everyone behind you, you know, they're calling you an idiot anyway, but you recognize, yes, I am an idiot. It was me. I'm shaking the head. So the things in the side of the helmets, I guess we'll keep that. It's sacred. You know, it's visors down is sacred. Sacred time. So looking back, you know, you mentioned, I think, 6 years, 2 years. Cole, I think you did 2 to 3 years of doing track days. I've did a lot more than and not a lot more than that, probably also about 5-6 years. Would you do it any differently? Would you, if you could go back now and you had like one piece of advice to give yourself before your first race weekend or before your first season, what would that piece of advice be? And how might you do it differently looking back, or are we just chilling? Rick.
I'm chilling unless we can go back a long time and I can start riding earlier. Otherwise, okay. Everything else was, I think the maturity of me getting into it now, being this old, knowing consequences, and if I'm going to have one, I'm going to pay for it, not only financially, but body wise, like they're saying. So I think that's good for me now, because then I can, instead of getting into a red mist phase, I can kind of just go at my pace and either I have it or I don't, and come to terms with that. But if I can go back a long time, I'll go back and get into it when I was still young and I can balance off of stuff and learn all the hard lessons I have to learn now the worst way. Otherwise, I'm good the way I did it.
Okay. All right. So maybe not how, not for yourself, how you're doing it now, but if you're sitting around waiting, don't wait.
Yeah, if you're a younger guy and you're in your 20s and you do a track day or two and you're like, I think it's fun, but I could do good at racing, but I'm not going to. If you can afford to do even just a couple of rounds in your local area, do it. You're going to pick up so much so fast, and it's easier to make the mistakes when you're younger and recover from them, because you will crash. I think everyone here crashed this year. It's going to happen. Might happen at a practice, luckily, so it didn't cost me any points-wise, but you're going to make those errors, and it's going to be part of the growth. So if you could do it when you're younger, do it, and you can learn a lot more.
All right. All right, I like that. That's good. Dan, what do we got?
Yeah, if I were to go back in time, I would have told myself to start off on a smaller bike. I had bought this 2003 ZX6 as my first track bike. Mm-hmm. And at the time, like, I really was not afraid to get hurt. And I was not afraid of speed, and I had zero skill. So
that's a good combo.
It's a great combo. And like 50% of the time I went out, I would crash and hurt myself. It really took me a long time to get any kind of progression whatsoever.
Okay.
And I had a couple big injuries when I was just doing track days, like B group. Mm-hmm. And that was hard for me to bounce back from. But like when I started racing, I had finally realized that I need to get on a smaller bike so I can learn. So I went out and bought the new R7 and built it over the winter. And then I raced that last year. And that was probably the best thing for me, honestly. Like it taught me so much.
Yeah. Just kind of dial it back a little bit and learn on something where you can't rely on a throttle. So, I mean, just to kind of dig into, you know, I don't need details on the injuries, but there's definitely been points where one of the biggest wrecks I had was a low side and a high speed left-hand turn. Right. And then now every time that I'm in a turn, specifically a left-hand turn, and I'm adding throttle, cause that's when it happened. I added a little bit too much throttle. Anytime I'm doing that right now, it's still like, there's just that little switch in the brain that hasn't quite clicked yet. That's still like, easy.
Oh, PTSD.
Yeah, sure. So are there any of those still kind of lingering around? Does that still affect you while you're out there, or have we kind of cleared those up?
The worst part this year was the fact that I was just in constant pain, and it could never leave my head. You know, okay. I knew that I made mistakes this year and I could make another one, and like I couldn't just be comfortable. That was the hardest part. Otherwise, I'm pretty good about it. You know, I've had some big injuries, and you know, up until halfway through this race season, I was fine, you know, and I was just getting faster and faster, and I was comfortable.
Okay. So, and then, you know, looking back, your advice is smaller bike. So do you think that would have actually prevented a lot of that? Or do you think there's just a mindset shift that's happened between then and now?
Yeah, it definitely would have prevented a lot of it, because, you know, I just wasn't up to speed on the 600 at the time. Okay. And if you're not up to speed, you can't learn. And, you know, it took me a while, but I eventually bought an R3. And, you know, if you've ever ridden one of those little bikes, like you're full throttle 100% of the time, like you're never off. And you know, it's so hard to make that bike go down. It's a lot safer and slower, and you can kind of process what's going on.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. And Cole, you're not on a small bike though, and neither is Rick. Both riding the S1000s. What say ye? I don't want you to get in an argument with Dan. We'll keep Dan safe down there. But you know what's your opinion on that? Is that because we're older and we don't have time? We can't do the little bike thing, or well, whatever. I'll risk the maybe I don't learn as much, but I'll have fun on the big bike while I have it. What's the reasoning for that?
To echo what Rick said, I wish I would have got into this sooner, for sure. I didn't find this wonderful sport until later in life, obviously. And I don't know, the big bike. So I have a little Husky 401. Love it. And I brought it to the track a few times and had nothing but fun, probably similar to what the R3 is like, right? You just hold the thing slammed around there the whole time, and it's amazing. But at the end of the day, I mean, Americans, you know, they buy diesel trucks with 1,000 horsepower so they can not pull a trailer.
That's true.
It's just what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah,
but,
that's fair.
But I fully admit that I've hindered myself on hitting the track with 1,000, you know, not taking the proper steps to get there. But again, for what it's worth, I don't have time.
All right. Rick, are you still with us down there?
Yeah, I'm with exactly what Cole said. Like, okay. Dan is right. I should have done a smaller bike at the beginning. I did a try on some track days. I had an R6 for a little bit. It was just a stock one. And I just didn't have the skills to even put that to use. I should have went even smaller. And I, like Cole, I'm not wasting the time. And I do need to have fun when I'm there. It was just kind of a thing on the side. So I can make up for my lack of skill with the 1,000 a little bit. And I did. And it still hindered me, but I'm just going to have to slowly go from there because I'm not going back down anytime soon to have to get a real awakening of corner speed that I should be doing.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting dynamic because Dan, what you're saying about doing a smaller bike is 100% true. And I think everyone admits that, and you'll hear it all the time from coaches, professional riders, all the things. Just start on a small bike. You learn so much more in a small bike, and there's all the reasons out there for it, which I can't argue with, but I do personally think there is something to be said for, if you want it, go for it. If you want the big bike life, go for the big bike life, ride it.
Ultimately, it might not make you happy unless you're on that big bike.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's actually something I've been playing with a lot in my head lately is like, I've been thinking about putting it out. I know how much controversy it's going to cause the world, but I think there's something to be said for both sides, especially like, no offense to you guys, you know, you're a little older, not trying to be rude here, but a little older, you don't have as much time left in life. We got into it late. So yeah, why would I waste my time down racing on the slow bikes? I want the fast bike. You know, I grew up in a generation of speed, power. I'm going to stick with it. We're going to keep going. And that's what I need in life. So I think it's definitely interesting, but I can't discredit what Dan's saying about, you know, learning better, learning quicker. And you hinder yourself on a bigger bike. So
yeah, I think also with it's pretty simple that you have to be realistic. If you really have, where do you want to go with this sport? Do you want to have fun with it just kind of on the side, or do you want to actually push it? If you want to push it, you need to do it dancing, and you need to do it the right way at the beginning. It'll get you there faster over time. But if you're just going to have fun, and if it's just a side thing, do whatever you want. Yeah, you're going to be slower on the 1,000 than what you should be, and you're going to have to make up with it later. But it's kind of what are you wanting to get out of it? Because to do it the right way, it's going to take you a little more time in the beginning, but in the end, it's going to pay off so much more.
Yeah, that's fair. I think one of my other big arguing points for if you want to race the leader bike, just go for it, is that someone else is having that same discussion in their head, and they're probably, someone else is going to go for the leader bike. So you'll have a battle buddy out there. There's always someone to race. So, oh man, it's good though. It's a hard point. Something I'm actually personally kind of toying with right now. Right now, like next season, I'll be racing a leader bike, mostly because that's what I've got, and I don't want to get rid of it because I like it too much. So a little bit of selfishness. I could sell it and buy a smaller bike, but it's what I got. I don't want to get rid of it, and I can't afford to have another bike to race. So that's what we're doing. Do I think that's going to be a downfall on my overall progression? Yes. But am I trying to race Moto America or MotoGP? No. So those are kind of the odds and ends in my head that I weigh and what led me to that decision. But I like the feedback on that. I think that's a hot topic. Maybe we'll keep up with that in episodes to come.
If you want to move up on bikes, you know, it is actually a lot of money to, you know, buy one bike, race it for a couple seasons, then buy another one and then buy another one. Or you could just go get a leader bike and learn it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And stick with it. Yeah. That is another good point. The financial aspect of it.
Well, plus when you're talking about, you know, how much time my old butt has left. Mm-hmm. If I went through the stages at this point, there might not be such thing as 1,000 by the time I get back.
That is true. I do think at this point, the club racing, the fact that you can still see like 06 Gixxers out there at times. I know those are getting pretty rare, but you still see them. I don't think the leader bikes as we know them will be leaving club racing anytime soon, but we are kind of hitting that peak, the peak of the era of the 1,000cc superbike. So that's a good point, Cole. Something we keep talking about on here quite a bit. All right. So that's, you know, if you could go back and tell yourself something or do something different, this is maybe mostly for me, but for anyone else that's been listening to us and decided they also want to club race next year, what advice do you have for them? You know, going into that first season, it's winter time now, they're getting prepped. What are we telling them?
Take it easy. You know, don't rush into your first day and expect to win. And, you know, just try to be comfortable and ride safe in the end. The last thing you need to do is, you know, take a spill on your first day, and then, you know, you can't come back the rest of the season, and then you're not learning if you're on the ground. So that's what I would say.
Okay. All right. Stay up rather than win. Maybe good little words for that.
I'd say just what Dan said. Just if you have the speed, you have the speed. But if you're having to push everywhere and try to take a lot of risks, the only reason I made it is to where I did in the championship is because I made it to all the races. If I would have just sent it trying to do something I might not have been able to do, who knows what kind of injury or the bike or all that stuff, you're going to learn a lot more just making it through the whole season. Just it's your first season. If you're really that good that you're going to be so miraculous that you're going to go through, then it's not going to be a big deal. And you'll probably be in Moto America or somewhere past. Mm-hmm. Most of us aren't that. So just make it through the season, enjoy being able to do it for more than 1 year than just throwing it all in 1 year and then not being able to do it anymore.
Yeah. So I can't just go in and have my year of glory and quit because I ran out of money.
It's your money. Sucks if you only get to do a couple races though, and that's where all your money and the bike went. For wrecking gets expensive really fast, depending on how
bad I think that's the key right there, is that you could do a one season of glory, come home with a bunch of trophies, but if you're not good for it, then it's quickly going to be one weekend and you're out of money and you're done, or maybe, you know, two or three. So that's some good advice. I like it. That's something that I'm weighing heavily. For me personally, I'll say that there's kind of both sides of it, because I am more of a very conservative person out there. Somehow naturally, subconsciously hold myself back in many different ways. And I'm actually trying to go at it weekend by weekend. I'm not planning on it for the whole season. I'm just planning. I'm going to go do a race week, and I'm going to give it everything I have. You know, the goal is not to put the bike down. But the goal is to get out there and see if I can kind of shake a little bit of that. I got to bring this bike home this weekend. Shake a little bit of that off and see if that helps open up some of my future, because I'm definitely got some seconds to gain, maybe minutes in some places. So, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I will also still be trying to keep the bike up. I promise I'm not just going to go dump it on purpose. So, Cole, any advice from your side?
I think I would just reiterate what you guys said. Be honest with yourself on what you're hoping to achieve. I won't mention any names, but I know there's a guy floating around our paddock that's, you know, older than I am, and he's looking for some coaching because he's going to MotoGP. And I'm not here to tell you I'm ever going to MotoGP, right? That ship has sailed. I understand that. So we should all just realistically look at what we're trying to get out of this, what we're trying to do, and take it as far as you can or as far as you want to. I don't mean to poo-poo on it, but
sweet. We're getting to the end of my question list. What I do have a question for you guys about real quick, just to kind of kick it back. You guys watch MotoGP, Moto America, any of that?
I don't watch MotoGP.
No MotoGP. Ricky, MotoGP at all?
MotoGP. Okay. Mostly MotoGP.
Okay. So I guess, Dan, you're a little out on this one, but maybe I'll let you throw in your prediction anyway. I just want a season championship winner this year prediction and get it on.
Bagnaia.
Okay. All right. That's pretty. Yeah.
He's already got his winner. He doesn't care.
There you go. Yeah. That's true. The hat. He took it. Rick, what do we got?
I'd like to say Pecco again, but Martin's looks like he's matured enough that he might be able to hold on to it.
Okay. So you don't think he's going to lay it down in the next four rounds two times? And
he's done very well with managing it with both of them. Obviously they're both on the limit. So it looks like they're just what's famously done from the announcers is like, does anyone want to win when they say that it's horrible? Of course they do. That's why they're pushing that hard. But they're both on the limit that so much, and with Marquez, Anaya, and Acosta now just coming up there fighting me with them, it just gives the door open for so much to happen at the front that I think even if someone has a mess up, it's not going to be for the whole weekend. So mm-hmm. I think it can be managed, and it'll go down to the last race for sure. And I think Martin can hold on to it, unfortunately. I would like Pecco, but I think he can hold on to it.
Okay, so you want Pecco, but you're putting your prediction on Martin?
Yep.
Okay, all right. And Cole, what do we got? I know we've kind of talked about it before, but I got to know.
Bagnaia.
Okay, that's interesting. So you got two Peccos over there. You got a Martin behind me, or underneath, sorry. And I also have got to go for Jorge Martin as my prediction. Much like what Rick, you were talking about, that maturity, I've seen that change. I've seen that change in him. And I also think he really just wants to stick it to some people. I think he's willing to stay mature, willing to not, you know, willing to play the right game, to race the right race, and to take the points where he needs to take them and where he can, rather than just try and get all the points every time. I think he's willing to play that game the right way, because I really think he's trying to stick it to the man, but we will see.
I'll just end my MotoGP discussion on the fact that those men you're talking about him sticking it to, they're not going to allow that to happen.
Interesting. All right. That's a bold claim.
I pick Bagnaia not because I 100% believe he can win it. I believe that he'll get some help somehow, some way.
All right.
Is there just one round left in MotoGP?
We have four more.
Four rounds.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
So there's a lot of points.
A lot of points left.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's still a pretty good season. We did just crown Moto3. World champion got crowned this past weekend, I believe. Yeah. So, but yeah, MotoGP is not anywhere near being. No one's got the shoot yet. So we got a ways to go. Well, anyway, Cole, did you have any other last questions before we sign off? And
I think that's good.
Wrap this up. Sweet. Rick, Dan, anything else to add for tonight?
I just like to thank Cole and Dan and everyone else out there that helped out. Because Dan, I mean, he was ahead of me, and I finally had – I didn't know he had an injury, but that makes sense why I kind of got ahead of him a little bit towards some of the races in the end. And it's just nice that I could go talk to them and say, hey, you guys were doing this, and there wasn't any animosity. It was just like you're racing with more friends, and it was really nice. That's all.
Yeah, awesome.
No, yeah. Not to steal any of your thunder, Rick, but I agree, and I should have said that. This year, I mean, I raced not a full schedule the year before, but I don't know if it was the money. I don't know if it was the, you know, that brought it together, but I really enjoyed this year meeting you guys, talking to you guys and others, and just the overall camaraderie of the novice group this year was great.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty awesome to be able to go out and do something so intense and, you know, at times cutthroat, and then be able to come back and just talk about it, you know, and the whole paddock is so tight, and yeah, it was great.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, you know, once again, for the audience, if you're looking for that camaraderie and you're looking for a great sport that costs a lot of money and will probably bleed you dry, but is a ton of fun while you're doing it, Club Racing Motorcycles is for you. Utah would love to have you come out and join, fill up the grid, get that KOM race completely full in the next couple of years. If you're just interested and you're not quite sure yet, it's free to watch. So go out and watch it. That goes for anywhere in the country. For the most part, go find your local club, watch some free racing. It's a good time. And I'm pretty sure any of you guys, if you found someone that's like, hey, where's the best place to spectate? They're more than willing to show them where to go and give them a heads up to all the greatness down there. So without anything else, I think that'll go ahead and wrap us up. Do want to thank you, Rick, Dan, and Cole, I guess, for joining us this week. And to the audience, thanks for joining us also. Hopefully you guys enjoyed, and we'll see you all next week.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.